Chapter 6. As I headed back into Westhurst, I decided to make a stop before heading home. From everything I'd seen in the gloom, the creatures there only had primitive weapons. So if I got a gun, that could put me at a huge advantage if I ran into trouble. But despite my grandpa's clear interest in guns from the pile of gun magazines I'd found in his old junk room, I hadn't found any in the house. So I looked up the nearest gun store in town. The first place I found with a search was called Nathan's Army Surplus and Arms. The shop had mixed reviews, but the prices were low, which was what I needed right now. I'd have to put whatever I got on a credit card, which wasn't ideal, but it would be an investment in my future. There was also the fact I didn't know if there was more than one way to reach the surface from the gloom. I'd only seen a fraction of the underground world, but it was clearly full of danger. I'd helped Ibseth escape the Nykdors, so I'd inadvertently made what sounded like a powerful enemy in her sick half-brother, Ursinger. I needed protection. If not for my sake, then to keep Ibseth safe. So the expense of a couple of guns was really a necessity. I hoped Meyer would be able to deliver on his promise to sell the ring sooner rather than later, because I would feel a whole lot better once I was able to secure the entrance to the tunnels, too. I pulled up to a big brick building just off the main street that looked like it had been there since the town was founded. The sign on the front read, Nathan's Army Surplus and Arms, with a caricature of a man with one arm and wild hair to one side. I checked the reviews on my phone again. Most of them seemed to cite the fact that the owner, Nathan, was a bit of an eccentric, to put it mildly. But I didn't see anything about the store selling poor quality merchandise, or anything else that would really matter to me. I didn't mind an eccentric personality. I had gone to art school, after all. I walked into the store as a bell above the door rang, and the interior was one of the strangest things I'd ever seen. In the middle of several of the large display tables were dioramas made with mannequins dressed in fatigues. One was set up to look like it was an army soldier crawling across a table of olive drab and sand-colored shirts, while another stood proudly on a different table of gas masks, helmets, and goggles and pointed into the distance with one hand while the other held a toy pistol. Between the shelves, the walls were decorated with camouflage netting, giving the interior a strange, jungle-like appearance, but I didn't have any more time to take things in.
"Good evening."
A nasal-sounding male voice said from somewhere in the depths of the store. I looked around and spotted a man in his late 30s with sandy blonde hair that looked like it was rarely combed. The gentleman stood behind the front counter and was dressed all in camo, and because half the store looked like an indoor forest, he was actually difficult to spot at first glance. I knew right away this was the infamous Nathan. His right sleeve had been rolled up and pinned, because that arm was missing, which meant the caricature on the sign was clearly him. "Hi," I said, and walked up to the counter.
"I haven't seen you around,"
the wild-haired man said as he looked me up and down.
"I'm Nathan. What can I do for you?"
"I just moved here," I explained. "And I was thinking about getting something for home defense and maybe do a little hunting later this year."
"You've come to the right place,"
Nathan said with a wide grin.
"Now, on a scale from novice to Rambo, how would you describe your firearm proficiency?"
"I used to go hunting with my dad," I replied, but I wasn't exactly sure where that fell on the shop owner's odd scale. "I know my way around a bolt-action rifle, and I've shot a handgun a time or two at a gun range. I'd like to get a rifle that is durable and won't fail when I need it, even if it gets muddy or dirty or banged around. Not to say I'm not going to clean it or take care of it. I just want it to work all the time if I maintain it.
And what were you looking to spend?
Nathan asked as he started to go over to the locked display of rifles behind the counter.
That's kind of the problem,
I said, as I moved down the counter to look over the man's selection.
I'm on a bit of a budget at the moment, and I'd like to upgrade later as I can.
Well, Nathan said thoughtfully as he smoothly unclipped a key ring from his belt and sorted through the dozens of keys with his single hand.
You say you want something that is always gonna work. The ARs are pretty popular, but they're pricey, and in my opinion, a little moodier than your standard AK.
The wild-haired man looked over the rifles as he unlocked the glass cabinet with a loving expression.
Some are opposed to the AK, on the grounds they're made by commies, he continued. But I think that's part of the beautiful irony.
Irony? I asked, after he paused to smile at me.
See?
He cleared his throat, leaned forward a bit, and smiled even wider.
If someone breaks into your house, what is it they are after?
My stuff? I guessed.
Yeah, he said as he nodded. You are a smart one. Got it right away. Now, if they are after your stuff, what are they? Besides a burglar, of course. I don't know. A fucking commie, he growled. Only commies think they deserve shit that don't belong to them. That's the irony. You are killing commies with a commie weapon. I fucking love the poetic justice of it.
Yeah, I cleared my throat. So, an AK? Do you have a cheap one?
Yeah. Gotta admire its practicality as well.
He turned to the rack on the wall and gestured.
This one was made in Bulgaria, and honestly, I don't know enough about them to know whether or not I'm opposed to their economic practices.
The man in the camo jacket selected a rifle, which didn't have a magazine in it, and set it on the counter between us.
Do you know how to check if it's loaded, son? Nathan asked.
May I? I replied, as I pointed to the rifle.
Please do,
the eccentric man said with a nod. I picked up the AK, pointed it at the ground, and checked the chamber, which was clear. Then I looked the rifle over, and even though I didn't consider myself an expert, I could tell it was old and well used, but it was clean, and everything seemed to be in working order. How much? I asked, as I set the rifle back down on the counter.
I'm not gonna lie. This one's had a few rounds out through it, Nathan said. But that just means it's all warmed up for you. I've shot it myself, and I can tell you it's reliable, and as accurate as you can expect an AK to be.
What do you mean? I asked.
It depends on how good of a shot you are,
he said with a casual shrug.
You'll have good grouping at 100 yards, looser at 200, but it will still put a man in the ground. Good marksmen can go out past that, but that don't matter much for shooting burglars, does it?
No, sir, I said.
Hell, he continued. The fucking Arabs use these guys out in the Middle East, and they probably don't even clean 'em. You'll probably never have to. But if you take good care of her, she'll last you a good 20,000 more rounds. Since you're new here, and I like a return customer, I'd be willing to let it go for 250, and I'll throw in a box of ammo and an extra magazine for you.
I knew the price of guns and ammo were very changeable based on supply and demand, as well as any number of other factors. But it seemed like a fair enough price. I'd also like to look at a handgun, I said,
and maybe some other odds and ends.
You said you've shot a handgun before? He asked.
Yeah, I said. A Glock, a few times. I think it was a 19.
I normally have a few used ones for sale, Nathan sighed. But shit has gone bananas because, well, fucking commies, eh?
What do you have? I asked, before he could launch into another rant.
If you're on a budget,
Nathan said with a thoughtful sigh,
a high point 9mm might be the way to go. Gun snobs will turn their noses up at it, but it will shoot accurately out to 25 yards, and it'll still kill a commie just as easily as a tricked-out Glock would. Only $100 for this used one here.
Sounds good to me, I nodded. There was a stack of paperwork I had to sign, but as the wild-haired man entered the information into his computer, I walked around the store and picked up some other things I thought would be useful for my next trip into the gloom. I realized I didn't know exactly what I was doing with my equipment setup, but it wasn't like I could go on the internet and look up proper gear to take to a dungeon fantasy world for maximizing loot acquisition. So I just decided to do my best guess with my setup and buy better equipment once I had more money and experience. I picked out a canteen, a new backpack that would be better suited for the task, a tactical knife, some sound-suppressing earphones, some blue camo I thought might work in the underground world, a holster for the pistol, a few more magazines for both the rifle and pistol, and a belt to put mag pouches and the knife on. I cringed at the current price of ammo, but there wasn't a lot to be done for it, and I reminded myself that this was an investment, both in my future fortune and in Ipseth's safety. All told, I was able to get 40 rounds for the handgun and 200 for the AK. The whole purchase didn't quite max out my credit card, but it came within $50, and my palms were a bit sweaty as I swiped my card through the reader. I still had what was left in the bank, and if I could sell the rest of the jewelry I had on hand in the next month or two, I would be more than fine. But it was definitely a risk versus reward situation. Really, I was just glad Ohio didn't require waiting periods or extensive background checks to buy firearms, so I wouldn't have to wait 4 days before I could go back to explore the gloom.
There you have it, Nathan said, as he finished ringing up the sale. You come back any time.
I imagine you'll be seeing a lot more of me, I said with a smile as I gathered up my purchases.
That's what I like to hear. The eccentric man grinned.
I headed back out to the truck and carefully placed the rifle and the bags on the passenger side, and I then hopped into the driver's seat as my head spun with thoughts. There was something more than just the promise of riches drawing me back to the gloom that I couldn't quite put my finger on. Money was nice, but it had never mattered that much to me since I'd managed my whole life on very little. But there was something else to the gloom, a sense of excitement, almost. I didn't know how the entrance to the tunnel had gotten there, or how far into the earth the cave systems went, but I wanted to know more. Everything about the gloom had been alien to me, and maybe I just didn't have enough sense to be afraid of it. Instead of fear, I felt curiosity. Considering no one else in the world seemed to be aware of this underground world, was there some kind of magic involved? Was magic even real? Given I'd killed monsters and saved a blue-skinned woman, I was more inclined to believe such a previously outlandish idea. Ipseth seemed to think magic was real too, and despite how innocent the elven woman was, she certainly wasn't dumb. Over and over again in my head, the same question rang out. What was down there? It was well after dark when I pulled into my driveway, and there was old Mrs. Whitmire, out in her yard and trying to peer into mine. As I got out of the truck,
I decided to have a little fun with her. "Hi, Mrs. Whitmire," I shouted. The old gal looked like she just about jumped out of her skin as she started.
Oh, hello, Eddie,
the old woman said with a plastered-on smile.
How are you, dear?
Just fine, thanks, I replied, as I took my bags out of the truck. Your roses are looking well.
Oh, thank you,
Mrs. Whitmire said with false modesty. But then the older woman looked at the box for the rifle with a raised eyebrow.
Are you planning to do some hunting?
When the season comes around, I said pleasantly. You have a good night now.
You too,
the blue-haired lady called back before she headed back into her house. I walked up onto my porch, into the house, and closed the door behind me. Ipseth was sitting on the couch with a concerned look on her face, and I heard the sound of a laugh track coming from whatever she was watching on the laptop.
Oh, Eddie,
the elven woman gasped as she saw me come in.
This is horrible.
What's horrible? I frowned as my heart skipped a beat. Did she not like it here anymore? Then Ipseth turned the laptop around, and I saw she was watching some sitcom where a middle-aged couple seemed to be having an argument about their teenage daughter.
The girl in the box has taken a terrible lover,
the blue-skinned woman explained.
And her mother and father do not know what to do. Then these terrible, unseen people laugh at their pain.
I had to stop myself from laughing, because I didn't want Ipseth to feel like I was making fun of her concern. It's all right, Ipseth, I said gently as I set down my bags and the rifle box. Those people are just actors. None of that is real. They're just performing for an audience. The elven woman stared at me for a moment with her wide, violet eyes, and then she looked back down at the screen.
This is a play?
The white-haired woman asked with a dubious expression.
It isn't very funny.
Maybe it's a cultural thing, I shrugged. I'm not a fan of that show either, but there are plenty of other ones if you don't like it.
Was your trip successful?
The blue-skinned beauty asked as she saw my bags and closed the laptop. I think it was, I replied and smiled. I should be able to sell the gold and make a good bit from it. I actually wanted to talk to you about that. I was thinking about going back down into the gloom.
Oh no, Eddie!
Ipseth gasped as she came up off the couch in a flash, lunged forward, and clung to the front of my shirt.
You mustn't go back.
Why not? I asked, as I wrapped an unsure arm around her trembling form and looked at the elven woman's furrowed brow. I can understand you don't want to go back, and I won't ask you to, but I figure there's a lot to be found down there.
Yes,
the elven woman said emphatically, and her grip tightened on my shirt.
There are monsters and Ursinger's soldiers.
I know, I said, as I gently pried her fingers open. And then I knelt down, opened the rifle box, and pulled out the well-used AK. That's why I got this.
What is that?
Ipseth asked, and took a step back from the weapon. Her expression was equal parts curious and wary. It's called a rifle, I explained, and it shoots out little pieces of metal with powerful force, kind of like a bow shoots an arrow. From what I've seen of the gloom, no one down there has anything like this, and that will give me an advantage. Not that I'm planning on going and starting shit. What I want to do is go exploring, maybe pick up a little more gold, and if I get into trouble, I'll have this with me.
You are a strong warrior, Eddie Hill,
Ipseth said in a grave tone, and she took her head of white hair.
But you do not know the gloom. There are other things down there beside Ursinger and his minions. Trolls, orcs, basilisks. Then there are other things, darker things, that come up from the Twilight Region and deeper.
The Twilight Region? I asked.
There are places beneath the gloom, too, where demons and aberrations dwell.
The elven woman's violet eyes were shadowed by a nameless fear.
This is why the Yini and other tribes do not just overthrow Ursinger. The Yini chief is the one charged with the task of keeping the evil in the deep at bay.
I wasn't sure how to take what Ipseth was telling me. Part of me wondered if the same people who had told her humans ate children and that the surface was populated by monsters were the ones who told her a man like Ursinger was all that stood between the gloom and chaos. The other part of me recognized there actually might be some scary, dangerous shit down there beyond my human comprehension. But I couldn't let one possibility deter me. I understand what you're saying, Ipseth, I said gently, as I set aside the rifle and walked up where the elven woman stood with her arms wrapped around herself. But you were raised to be afraid of the world you lived in. It sounds to me like the biggest monster in the gloom is Ursinger, and he's using fear to stay in power.
That could be so,
Ipseth said with a little nod.
My life in the gloom was sheltered. But all the same, I do not want anything to happen to you. You are the first person to be kind to me, without wanting anything in return.
Her voice caught at the end of her sentence, and I felt something in my chest clench in response. I can handle myself, I assured the blue-skinned woman. I promise I won't take any unnecessary risks. But that tunnel is in my backyard, and I feel like I should know what's down there.
I have heard,
Ipseth said as she looked up at me.
There are bandits who live in the southern region of the gloom, away from the villages and cities. Ursinger's men are unlikely to go there. There are also trolls who live in that region, but if you are careful, you might be able to find what you seek there.
All right, I said as I nodded. The southern region. I'll go tomorrow night, after it gets dark, and be back before the sun comes up. But right now, I'm going to put this stuff away and make us some dinner. How's that sound?
I would like that,
the white-haired woman said as she smiled shyly. I made up some spaghetti and frozen garlic bread, which was a simpler bachelor kind of meal. But my elven companion was over the moon about the wonderful flavors and spices of the dish. Then the rest of the night was lost in pleasant domestic tasks. I unpacked my few boxes, folded the clothes I'd thrown into a trash bag, and discovered Grandpa's old collection of 70s country records. Oh, man, I said as I pulled out a Best of the Grand Ole Opry album. This is the best!
What is it?
Ipseth asked as she knelt down beside me and looked at the glossy cover of the album in my hands. Only some of the best music ever made, I said, as I read the names and song titles on the back. Loretta Lynn, Johnny Cash, Woody Guthrie. There wasn't just country music there either. Some of the records went all the way back to the 50s, with artists like Buddy Holly, Bob Dylan, and even some Janis Joplin. After I blew some dust off the record, I set it on the turntable, flipped the switch, and carefully placed the needle down. Then Loretta Lynn began to sing sweetly about secret love by the moonlight, and I was swept away. Back to my childhood, watching my mom clean the house as she danced to Loretta and Dolly. I was overcome by the memory, so I swept Ipseth into my arms and started to dance a two-step with her there in the living room.
This is lovely,
the elven woman breathed as she giggled. I could get used to it, I agreed, and looked into her violet eyes. I could have kissed Ipseth right then and there, but she shyly dropped her eyes and placed her head on my chest. I was too much of a gentleman to press things, but I could feel something growing between us, and whatever it was worth the wait. As the song ended, I let the elven woman go and saw the rosy blush on her cheeks, and I couldn't help but brush my thumb along her flushed skin. "I'm glad we met, Ibseth," I murmured. "It makes me really happy you're here."
"You have shown me so many wondrous and magical things, Eddie,"
she whispered, as her cheeks darkened even more.
I only hope I can repay you someday."
"Seeing you safe and smiling is payment enough," I said before I could stop myself. I didn't want to be too forward, but it was the truth. And she should know that she was safe here with me for as long as she wanted, with no strings attached. Ibseth bit her lip and looked up at me with a hint of surprise in her violet eyes, but a warm smile quickly tugged at the corners of her mouth.
"Then I will ensure to keep myself safe and smiling for you, Eddie,"
she whispered, before she ducked her head under my chin and cuddled up against my chest. We listened to old records for a while longer while I decided where to put my things as I finished unpacking. Eventually, we both decided to go to bed, Ibseth in the bedroom and me back on the couch. But I'd admit the idea of the beautiful woman in the next room and our momentary closeness as we danced to old country songs kept me awake for a while longer. In the morning, I made coffee again and started to make preparations for my trip into the gloom that night. I loaded the magazines for the rifle with 7.62 by 39 millimeter rounds and 9 millimeter rounds in the magazine for the pistol. Then I double-checked the firearms to make sure everything was in working order. Lastly, I put some jerky and trail mix in my new backpack and filled up the canteen so everything would be ready to go when the time came. When Ibseth got up, she watched what I was doing for a moment with a furrowed brow as she got herself some coffee.
"Are you sure you must go, Eddie?"
she asked in a concerned tone. "I'm sure," I said, as I put a bag of dried fruit into my bag. "It's not just about me wanting to find more gold. The cave is right in my backyard, and I think I should really know what's down there. I know you're worried, but I'll have my guns with me if anything happens. But I'm not going to go looking for trouble. I just have to know."
"I understand,"
the elven woman sighed as she sat on the couch and looked at me with sad eyes.
"You are a capable man, but I still fear for your safety."
"And I appreciate that," I said as I looked at the blue-skinned woman. "But I'll be here all day, and we can get some more stuff done around the house. When the sun goes down, I'll head into the tunnels, but I'll be back before sunrise. I promise." Ibseth and I tackled Grandpa's junk room after we ate breakfast, and we filled up several trash bags with old magazines and the expired MREs. I'd have to wait for Meyer to get back to me about the sale of the ring to have some of the furniture taken away, but once it was cleaned out, it would make a nice second bedroom after a fresh coat of paint. One day, I would have to get around to changing the horrible shag carpet, but that was further down the growing list of things to do, after fixing the fence and sealing up the entrance to the tunnel in the backyard so I didn't have to worry about unexpected visitors from the gloom. After a while, the man from the cable company showed up to set up the internet. I thought about asking Ibseth to wait in the bedroom, but if she was going to live with me, I would eventually have to explain her presence to people. Besides, the elven woman shouldn't have to live hidden away from the world. She'd experienced enough of that in the gloom. "Hi there," I greeted the man in workman's blues as I answered the door.
"Ha,"
he replied with a professional smile. "I'm Gary, with Westhurst Communications. I'm here to set up your router." "Come on in," I said with a friendly wave of my hand. There was a knot in the pit of my stomach as I waited for the inevitable questions when he saw Ibseth, who was busying herself with the breakfast dishes at the sink. To Gary's credit, he stepped into the double wide and only paused for a shocked moment when he saw the blue-skinned woman.
Do you know if there's ever been internet service here before?
The cable guy stammered and tried not to stare.
I kinda doubt it, I said in a normal tone, as if a night elf woman wasn't doing my dishes.
Is that a problem?
I might have to run a line, Gary said as he recovered his professionalism. Where do you want it to come in at?
I was thinking about putting the TV over there, I replied, as I pointed to a wall. I don't know if that would affect things.
The router should be able to cover the whole house, the cable guy said, and he fixed his eyes on me.
Let's, take a look outside and see what we can do. Gary and I stepped outside and looked around the house to see where the best place for a line would be, and we settled on a spot not too far from where the TV would be. Then I hung out and watched him work, since it was kinda interesting seeing how it all worked.
We exchanged small talk for a while, until Gary finally brought up the subject of Ibseth.
I don't want to be rude, he said in a careful tone, but is your girlfriend okay?
Yeah, I said lightly, as I tried out my lie for the first time.
We met online. She's really into the whole cosplay thing. That's just what she looks like almost all the time.
All the time? The cable guy asked with polite interest.
Isn't that kind of strange for you?
It was weird at first, I said with a shrug.
But you get used to it. I don't mind, as long as she's happy.
Honestly, Gary said as he started to drill a small hole for the cable.
Working in people's houses, I see all kinds of stuff.
This isn't even the strangest thing I've seen. One guy I set up cable for had one of them BDSM swings right in his living room.
Takes all kinds, I guess.
It sure does, I snorted. But I was internally fist-pumping that my story had worked. Once Gary was done with his work and left, I set up the TV and showed Ibseth how to use it. The elven woman seemed to be adapting well to life in the modern world, and while she did find it strange and fascinating, it wasn't really very different from watching things on the laptop, just a bigger screen. For today, I said to her, after we'd gone over how to work the TV, I'd like you to stay in the house. But once I get back from the gloom, I think you can start going outside if you like. That way, you're not cooped up in here all the time.
I would like that,
the white-haired woman said before her brow furrowed over her violet eyes.
But are you not worried about what your neighbors might say?
If anyone asks, I said, as I tried to think of how to explain it to the elven woman, just say you're into cosplay.
Cosplay?
The elven priestess tried out the word.
What is that?
I told Ibseth about how some people like to pretend they were people from books or shows, even beings from other worlds, and showed her some pictures on my phone. I wasn't entirely sure she understood, but I felt if we took things slowly introducing her to the neighbors, it would be weird, but fine, with a little time. I could always tell the neighborhood she liked to stay in character all the time, and that would explain the elven woman's eccentricities. People would find it strange, but I was banking on the fact they'd lived next to my grandpa for years, and having a woman they thought liked to dress as an elf all the time would be a step up from that, at least. It probably wasn't going to make us popular, but Ibseth's sweet nature would win them over in the end. Most of them, anyway. But eventually, night came, and it was time for me to head back into
the gloom.